Item four, discussion and possible action on the report from the technical consultant. As you can see, Ryan is in the room with me, so we will let him start his routine.
All right, good morning, everybody.
Good power.
Yeah, thank you. Today should be a fairly quick meeting. Just want to give you all some few updates on what we've been doing. We've got some additional amendment or additional guidance from the Texas Water Development Board on the amendment. Cover that. Jen is going to step in and cover our collection efforts, collecting all the FMXs in coordination with different communities across the region. So she'll kind of summarize that effort, and then we'll close out with some what's coming up in the next steps, next couple meetings. So just some general updates. We did meet with a consultant group that was working with the GLO on the San Bernard. They had reached out to us. Just kind of a brief overview of what they're doing. They are studying the San Bernard and Brazos River at the coast, and particularly the San Bernard. The San Bernard is not in our watershed. It's actually in the lower Colorado, but there's a lot of interchange in the floodplain between the two rivers, the San Bernard and the Brazos. And the San Bernard tends to close itself off at the coast, and it sends floodwaters down the International Gulf Coast waterway. So they reached out and asked if there was any interest in them presenting or anything like that. I think really it's mostly focused on the San Bernard, and the results of their analysis showed that it didn't really affect the flood risk in the Brazos region. But we did agree to share data, and if they have any information or any relevant information on flooding in the Brazos watershed to let us know. So we're just kind of staying in contact with them and coordinating on data sharing. So just wanted to let y'all know about that. Region 8 website revisions. Our subconsultant Holloway is currently working through our website through the whole thing and making recommendations to the Brazos River Authority's team to update the website. We're focusing on making it more intuitive, making the landing page more intuitive, and directing people to relevant information more clearly. And we've done the first draft of markups on that, and we will be working with the BRA to actually make those physical updates to the website. So that should be coming within the next couple of months. So we're excited to have that rolled out. We are also updating a survey. So if y'all remember from last cycle, we developed a really extensive survey that we sent out to communities all across the region, asking them things like, what kind of flood risk are you experiencing? Are there specific areas that we need to look at? Or do y'all have any projects like FMXs that y'all want to submit? Or what are y'all's floodplain management regulations, stuff like that? Just general, all across the board, flood risk information, flood management information from the communities. The survey last time was pretty big and large. It was drafted in a way to ask for information from communities that would, I guess, cover all the bases that the Texas Water Development Board was asking from communities, but it ended up just being a ton of questions. So we are working here internally to streamline that survey and make it more presentable and maybe put it into bite-sized pieces so we don't scare people away whenever they see this massive survey. So we're working on that. That should be finished in November, and we will start submitting that out back to communities to fill it out. For the next cycle, I kind of want to wait. I wanted to wait until we finished this amendment process before we started asking them for more information. So that will be coming out later in the year or potentially early next year for the second cycle. And then finally, we are starting the next cycle of flood planning too. We are working on the amendment. That's our primary focus, but we have team members who are able to start working on task one and two. So we just kicked off internally task one. I won't really present on that today. Probably at the next meeting, I'll provide a little bit more information about what that task is. But just in general, just so you'll know, it's just really an overview of the basin, the characteristics of the basin. And those really haven't changed a whole lot from the previous cycle. But we are going to go through the data that becomes available from the Texas Water Development Board and other things like that and update the characteristics of our watershed just to be, you know, to update whatever data that we get. So I'll present some of that next time.
Sure.
Next meeting probably in December. And we are kind of waiting on the Texas Water Development Board for some data. They're supposed to have Fathom data and flood risk information data, and they're still developing guidelines for this next cycle too. We haven't gotten that yet. So we are kind of holding off a little bit on task one and task two until we get that information. But we're doing what we can with the information that we have to get started on the flood plan. So the main thing that we want to talk about is the amendment. So I'm going to start off with some of the guidance that we received from the Texas Water Development Board about the amendment. So they did adjust the timeline. I think whenever we met last time, the deadline was going to be January 31st to submit the amendment to the Texas Water Development Board for those FMXs to be eligible for the FIF 2026 funding cycle. They provide clarification saying, no, we can push it back to April 21st. So the amendment's not due to Texas Water Development Board until April 21st. And they did clarify that they're only going to accept one amendment for that to the state flood plan for the 2026 fifth cycle. I think there's a total of two. They'll allow up to two amendments, but only one for the 2026 fifth cycle. They provided some clarification on when a community is requesting an amendment. A community must submit a formal request to the group, and the group must consider and act on that request within 180 days of the receipt. I don't think we've gotten really any quote unquote formal requests. Y'all actually took action last time to start the amendment yourselves, which was acceptable for their guidelines. So I think y'all satisfy this requirement as of now. The communities, if for whatever reason the group decides not to accept an amendment or reject a specific amendment, the community does have the opportunity to appeal to the Texas Water Development Board, and then the Texas Water Development Board and RFPG will have to work on that specific amendment request. The amendment submittal requirement, so that's the group submitting the submittal, submitting the amendment to the Texas Water Development Board. They provide some clarification on that. Still must meet all the regional flood planning requirements. So that's all the tables and geodata databases, maps, all the requirements of the actual state flood plan are in effect with this amendment. The group must respond to all comments that are received by on the amendment on whenever it comes that goes out for public comment. And then the amendment must be posted 7 days before the group votes on it. And so per our tentative schedule, which I'll talk about in a little bit, y'all only don't have to vote once, which will be potentially in, I think, February, at the February's meeting. So we'll just need to have that posted at a time.
So Ryan, I think we had talked about, so this stuff came out after we got started, right? And to be fair, we're about a cycle ahead of almost all the other regions. Everybody, this meeting, a lot of them were voting to start the amendment. So I think us getting started might have helped Water Development Board get motivated to get this stuff going. So the submittal requirements, unfortunately, they're not as good as we had hoped. They're still, in my opinion, unnecessarily burdensome for an amendment. But they're better than we feared, right? And a big part of that is because we're not doing projects. The burden to, like, amend in a project is just insane. It's like reinventing the wheel. So I think based on the decisions this group made last month and then this guidance that we have and the timeline that we actually have, I think we are all still set up for success. And I think we're fortunate that we chose the path that we did because it's no simple lift. Did you have a question?
Yes, ma'am. I think Ryan mentioned sometime in February we'll be having to act on the amendment process. The deadline is April 1st, so you think we can stretch that from Feb to March sometime so that if there is some sort of a delay or something got to popped up, at least, you know, we can see if we can include additional projects given the deadline is April 1st.
I can probably just skip to that slide and I can come back.
Yeah, because we've actually already closed. I don't know if you remember, Sujeet, we voted last month to have a very short turnaround.
So this is the schedule that I put together, and we can discuss it. So we're at the red line, October 24th. So the FMX submittal that we had set last time was October 18th. That was based off of the January 31st timeline that we got from the Texas Water Development Board. Jenna can kind of talk about this later. I think we've got really good feedback from communities, and I don't think there's a potential we could push this deadline if we wanted to, but I think the feedback that we were going to get from the amendment, we got that feedback. I think we got really good community buy-in. I don't think there was anyone who really felt like they were being left out of this amendment because of the deadline. So I think we're pretty solid there. And I think it does give us a good amount of time to work on the amendment, make sure, and we still are going to be coordinating with these communities from now until December 12th, whenever we provide the full set of FMXs completely filled out as far as the tables and GIS information, all that kind of stuff. And then it gives us a good amount of time to, the amendment actually itself is still kind of a cumbersome task, and I'll kind of follow up with that after this. I think the schedule is really healthy. So I think what we'll have is in February 20th, we'll bring the full amendment back to y'all and y'all can vote on it then. And then we have the opportunity, depending on y'all's recommendation or comments, to potentially do another meeting in March to bring it back if we need to make any major revisions and y'all need to vote on it. So there's some flexibility there at the end as well to have some go back and forth between us on this. So this is my tentative schedule. I think it works well for us, and also gives us, because of the timeline being the deadline being pushed back a little bit, it gives us the opportunity to also start cycle two now. Before, our focus was just to do the amendment and then start cycle two after. I think we can now work on both at the same time, since we can kind of divvy up the work on it with our team members. So does that answer your question, Sajith? Okay, cool.
And we'll have time today to go back through this a couple times if y'all need to. It's sort of the only thing on the schedule. So it's important that everybody sort of understands the difference. And really, the reality is almost nobody – we were going to be the only ones who could hit January because we were the only ones that were far ahead of us. So that moving to April sort of let everybody else in. But if you think about Christmas holidays and New Year's and when are we meeting again and all of that, moving it to April doesn't realistically add a whole lot of time for us. But we'll go through it a couple times if we need to today so everybody understands sort of what this means, who got in. I think you'll all be pleasantly surprised on how quickly the list grew. We'll go from there. So if you want to back to where we were before we sent you off.
And I know there's been a lot of discussion about how big of a task this amendment will be. Before, the guidance we got was that it's a full plan resubmittal, so we'd have to revise the full plan. The board came back and said, no, it's more of an amendment. And so they provided some specific examples of what this will look like. And I don't want to get too far in the weeds on it, but just so y'all understand what we're doing, it's really a short introduction letter of what changed and why the group decided to do an amendment. So that's kind of the amendment notice, the reason why, and a summary of the change. And the appendix is a little bit still kind of cumbersome. We're having to go through the plan and indicate which tables have changed and what changed within each chapter. So almost like a track changes to the original plan. So it's not redoing the work, but we are having to track changes. So it's still a bit of a work. We are still seeking clarification. We're working with the Texas Water Development Board on exactly what this means in the level of detail. Some of the guidance material that was provided, it was helpful, but left some questions that we're still coordinating on. And then all the supporting data, so that's all the GIS information, geodatabases, exhibits, maps, all that kind of stuff, all of that has to be completely updated with this amendment. So a little bit better, but still a little bit of work that we're going to have to do, which goes into this timeline. I think this is really kind of makes sense. We December 12th, we agree on the FMXs. And then that gives us to start in the new year to start this amendment process and doing that document, which will be kind of a moderate lift to do that. So.
And did you say we need to – well, would we put it out for public comment before February 20th, folks?
7 days before.
Okay. So, yeah, still not a lot of time. Might be interesting to see whether we hit that.
Yeah.
If we get a lot of public comment,
right,
then we might have to push that vote as it is to that March meeting. So
yeah. And so that's why we have a little bit of time for the March 20th if we need it also. So before the April 1st deadline. So any questions on that before we actually go into the FMX? All right, well, so I don't know. I guess y'all may have met Jenna. Jenna actually started her career on this project. We had her cold calling people from the get-go on her first day. So she's been heavily involved in this, and I'm going to let her kind of – she does a lot of the work for us. She's kind of like the assistant project manager for us. So I'm going to let her – she did a lot of effort reaching out and coordinating with communities. Also, special thanks to Lee for helping us out, some of the smaller communities. Thank you for your feedback with them and your help on that as well. So anyway, Jenna, go ahead.
Jenna, before you get too far, there was some confusion after last meeting, and so we'll do this 12 times too because it's hard to keep it right. There was some confusion, people interchanging the word project, right? So I'm going to let her go through and explain what does FMX represent. By default, a lot of us, because in our careers or whatever, we tend to collectively call these all projects. But by technically of how we open it and how they go into the plan, they're not all projects. And so will you kind of explain the three components? Because there was definitely at least one member last time that voted no because they thought, oh, we weren't going to be able to do anything in the amendment because they were confused by the term project versus the other items. So if you'll start with that before you get into your stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. So there are three different categories under our kind of FMX bucket. So you have FME, FMS, and FMP, and that's kind of where we come up with the general term of FMX. So FMP is really the only category that is actually truly projects, construction ready, looking for that capital funding to get that project implemented. And then you have FMEs and FMSs. So FMEs are evaluations or studies, as we think of them most of the time. And that's a really wide range of different items, anything from a general regional watershed study to kind of determine what is your existing flood risk in a given area, all the way up to doing some preliminary engineering and up to 30% design on a project. So it can include project development, but you're not looking at actually constructing that project yet. So that can kind of be confusing. Because you might be talking about a project that you want to do, but you're doing only the study portion of that project. So it's really classified as an FME or an evaluation. And then there's the FMS bucket, which is kind of this little bit of a gray area. It's the catch-all and it's strategies. So that can be anything that doesn't really align with an evaluation or a project. Typically, these are non-engineering studies that do benefit flood risk in some type of way. So we see a lot of drainage criteria manual updates or flood warning systems or development of public outreach programs to kind of notify about flood risk. So they are benefiting flood risk, but it's not constructing a project to actually reduce flood risk in a given area. So that's kind of the three buckets. So for the amendment, we were accepting new FMEs, new FMSs. But we're not accepting new FMPs, so construction-ready projects was the only thing that was kind of limited there.
Okay.
So like Ryan said, I'm going to go through kind of what our outreach efforts were and what response we got. So after y'all voted in August to get us started on the amendment, we developed a flyer to send out to our entire contact list. And it kind of covered what is the regional flood planning process, what is this amendment effort that Region 8 is doing, what's the timeline for that effort, and most importantly, how do they get in contact with us if they would like to be involved and get their needs in the list. So we sent that out in an email blast to over 600 representatives. This is our contact list we had initially developed in the previous cycle, although we did make some effort to revise that list and capture people who had left jobs or started new jobs to make sure that was up to date with representatives for communities. And then we followed up that kind of general email blast with some direct outreach to high population communities just to make sure they did get the amendment flyer. And offer to set up a meeting and talk through their needs if they needed. And we also reached out directly to any communities who had expressed interest in getting involved. There were several entities who had reached out either to us or to one of the group members or filled out the contact form on the Lower Brazos website between the first cycle and the second cycle of planning and let us know about their needs or wanting to get involved. So we did give all of them a phone call, reached out through email, just to offer to walk them through the process and get their needs incorporated into this amendment. And like Ryan said, some of the RFPG members also reached out to their interest groups that they represent and helped initiate that contact as well, which is always really helpful for that personal touch. We did get a really good response from this outreach. We met with a lot of communities, both in person and virtually upon request, including a lot of major metropolitan areas, as you'll see in the next slide. And we were able to respond to all inquiries received by the amendment deadline. And that meant going through kind of back and forth with people of, hey, we want to set up a call, have that call, talk through what their needs might be and get that kind of preliminary list to get to y'all. So we were able to do all of that by the deadline and didn't have anybody reach out and say, you know, we would like to be involved, but we can't make the 18th. So we were pretty successful there. With that outreach, we got response from 41 communities throughout the region, and it was a pretty good distribution coverage. That 41 communities consisted of 31 municipalities, which was both cities and a few drainage districts, special utility districts and the like, as well as 10 counties. And looking at who they represent, that covers over 60% of the Lower Brazos region population because we were able to target so many of those big communities, the major cities and counties that have high population. So even though it's only 41 out of, you know, that huge list of contacts, it was a really good representation of the region as a whole. And from these 41 communities, we received a total of 118 FMX submittals, including, you know, the FMEs, FMSs, FMPs. And 14 of those were revisions to what's already in the plan. So that includes some people who notified us, hey, there's this listing in the plan. It was non-sponsored, but we'd like to pick that up so we can move that from the not recommended list over to the recommended list. And then a few revisions to existing listings in the plan where they wanted to edit kind of the description or the cost to better align with their current needs. And then there were 104 completely new needs that people submitted. And we did receive some feedback on FMXs that communities would like to remove from the list. These are studies or projects that have been implemented since the first planning cycle, or they were something that we grabbed during our initial data gathering of public information, but they aren't in alignment with communities' needs anymore. So we'll go out and kind of do some of that cleaning in the 2028 regional flood planning effort to get anything that's no longer in need off the list so it's not too cluttered up. And then I'm just going to walk through kind of an overview of who reached out and what we got from them. We did provide a full list of all of the FMXs we received as part of the meeting materials. If y'all would like to look through, you know, each item, what that description was, who sent it, what its classification is. But this is just a little overview of who sent what. And I'll point out a few things as we go. So as you can see, we have a few submittals here in the FMP category, and we were not accepting new FMPs. But as we met with communities, we just let them know, you know, give us your full wish list of needs and we'll help you sort it into what goes in this amendment now and what should we come back for in the 2028 plan. So a few communities let us know about some FMPs that they'd be interested in the upcoming 2028 plan for us to have on our radar. But they understand they won't be incorporated into the amendment at this time. So you'll see that for City of Bryan, they let us know about a couple of things they'll be interested in, but understood it won't go into the amendment. And then you have City of Clifton, who actually spoke up and wanted to claim one of the FMPs on the non-recommended list. We had developed some FMPs in the previous cycle through our regional watershed studies for high flood risk areas. And City of Clifton came back and volunteered to sponsor one of those and move it over to the recommended list. And then you'll see several other entities who provided some information. And another slide similar to the last, City of Mineral Wells also spoke up and wanted to sponsor a couple of the FMPs we developed in the last cycle and move those over to the recommended list. And you'll see a lot of these smaller communities that just have one or two FMEs submitted. These are a lot of communities that didn't know exactly why they needed to be engaged in the previous cycle, but since have become aware of how it's tied to funding and wanted to get their foot in the door. So a lot of people submitted a master drainage plan for their community or something similar, just to kind of get something on the list, have an opportunity for funding in the future, and start to get involved. And then finally, these are all of the non-cities that we got in touch with and submitted something. So lots of different listings there. And as you'll see, most of what we got was FMEs. 89 of the 118 were FMEs. So mostly evaluations, master drainage plans, flood risk studies for watersheds, that type of thing. A good chunk of FMSs, these are those drainage criteria manuals and flood warning systems for the most part. And then that handful of FMPs that are either moved from the non-recommended to the recommended list or just kind of making us aware right now, and we'll come back and incorporate those in the 2028 plan. So that's kind of an overview of what we got. If there's not any questions on it, I'll let Ryan take back over.
I got a couple quick questions. Yeah. One, I wanted to point out, if y'all remember, the reason there's the tiny communities have the ability to opt in, we had some additional money that the Water Development Board gave to the region, and they let us make some decisions on how we wanted to expand, how we wanted to use that money. And our group collectively and almost unanimously decided we wanted to use that money to study areas that hadn't been studied, these smaller areas that we didn't know as much risk, maybe they didn't know what was going on. And that's where we came up with those projects that at the time weren't sponsored because these folks were just kind of overwhelmed. And so now we've seen in the next step, those things that people didn't know they needed, we studied, we got done, and now they've been adopted and they're moving forward. And I think that's some real progress for our small communities. I think that was a really good job with our group. And then my question was, is it appropriate? Did you discuss any of, like, Brian and some of these other people who are saying roll us to 2028? Does it make sense for any of these people to downgrade their projects to FMEs to do that first part of design to get them started? Was that ever part of the discussion, or is that a...
Yes. So for City of Bryan specifically, we kind of have, I don't want to say duplicate entries, but mirroring entries. So they do have FMEs for the design portion of those two projects that they're going to put in now. And then we're just aware that hopefully by the time we're ready for the 2028 cycle, make sure we touch base with them again to get those FMPs incorporated.
So theoretically, they can keep things moving.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I like it.
Yeah, we try to work with each entity to make sure that they had a plan in place for whatever they needed. We had to kind of strategize with them a little bit on, no, that's really an FME, and this is what you do here in order to get to this stage of the project. So I think each entity, we were able to have those conversations and clarify that point. So
good deal. Sujeet, did you have a question?
Yes, Chair. Ryan, you all collected this. These are the requests for the projects to be added as part of the amendment, correct?
So that's correct. Each entity that we met with, though, we told them, hey, just send us everything that you need in the flood plan, and we'll sort out whether it goes into the amendment or into the 2028 plan. And so what you see here is basically a summation of that. And obviously, all the FMEs, they want to put in the amendment so they can be eligible for funding in the next fifth cycle. I won't be surprised. Don't be surprised if come next year, whenever we present the new FMXs for the 2028 plan, that we don't really get anything or we get a small number because we pulled it all under this effort, which is really helpful too. We're not double doing work. This is work that we were going to have to do anyway for this next cycle. And so we were actually just doing this effort at the beginning rather than at the midway point.
One question. I think we got to keep our focus on the current amendment, and later on we got to look into the 2028. That's my perspective. But more importantly, all this, how do they compare? I know you didn't have chance to look into it, but how do these compare with our goals and objectives, which we beat it down? Because when I read some of the projects right there, I'm baffled, but I can't comment anything. But I know you got to evaluate and see of all this, which one can be amended right there into the current plan.
Yeah, I mean, an FME just in general fulfills some of the goals of just reducing flood risk in the flood plan. We haven't looked through all these, CG. This is just more of our collection effort. And we did try to pre-screen the best we could, but sometimes it's just we won't know that until December. When we come back in December, we're going to look at each one of these individually to make sure that they meet all the criteria from the last floodplain. Like, is it greater than a square mile? Does it meet a goal that's listed on the plan? That's what we're, that's the next step for us. And we'll bring all these back to you and let you know which ones we actually want to submit as being recommended into the state floodplan.
Yeah. In addition to our criteria, Water Development Board also put on that they are to submit the BCA and the tables, whatever it is. Have you all received anything part of it, or just basically, I have a project right here, see if I can get an amendment? Is that what you're feeling?
So the BCA, the BCR, however you want to call it, that's an FMP criteria. And since we're not accepting FMPs, we don't really need that. FMPs have a long list of things that are needed, like no impact analysis and statement confirmation. We need to quantify capital cost and benefit, all that kind of stuff. So kind of a heavy lift, which is
just not a practical thing to do in an amendment cycle as quick as we have to do an amendment, right? And I think that's why this group originally kind of leaned towards maybe it's not appropriate for us to bring in projects. This was, you know, more of a minor amendment for us. But to your point, Sujeet, this is just the whole list, the wish list, and then we got to run it through our criteria and the state criteria and see if they can be complete. So there is definitely some work for our consultant to do, even with the FMEs and FMSs. The P's would have been, I think, unrealistic to get the proper oversight and review done. So you were saying in December, you'll come back after y'all kind of look through this. And again, they'll keep cleaning and scrubbing and trying to get all that required data directly from the applicants so that then we can have something. We'd be voting on who met all those terms in February, right? And then if somebody can't get all their stuff together, then they'll roll, right? We can roll them over to the full plan. So.
And the FME is actually a low lift. What we do is we take the watershed or the study area for that FME, and we just throw it in GIS and process it against the existing data that we have from the last cycle. So we can develop those tables pretty easily. So the only thing we really needed from communities was a description, a name, and the study area or the location of this FME. We do the rest on our end. It's just easier that way and makes it for consistent data processing on our end to make sure they're all being put in correctly. So, and we did get watersheds for everything. We just need to go through and verify them and clean them up.
Ryan, the thing is, what I'm surprised is I saw a lot of the buyout and also education right there. I think, you know, there are better places to get funding rather than state floodplain. Maybe I'm not sure about it, but I was a little bit surprised at the list and the request right there.
I mean, those are legitimate things that can be put in the floodplain. And so I don't know if we weren't really trying to make it our place to tell them they can't put it in the floodplain. If they want it in the floodplain for whatever reason, we put it in the floodplain as long as it met the Texas Water Development Board. So if they want to have an education outreach program, I mean, this is a wish list. So for, to me, it's why not put it in the floodplain if it's something that you legitimately need. There might end up being a state funding opportunity that you want to go for. You wouldn't be eligible for that if it wasn't the state floodplain. So I said, hey, put it in the floodplain, and they may end up going and getting funding elsewhere. You're right. But again, this is just a wish list.
Well, Sujeet, to your point, like, this is all a giant black box exercise anyways, because we're turning in this list and then some separate process is done by the board to decide how to rank things in the plan and award money. And nobody knows what that is when they're getting in the list. It may not even be the same from time to time. So to your point, there may be a lot of people get on this list and those things never get funded, and maybe they should go to a FEMA grant or something like that. But I think, you know, in just our general discussions from the group, there's really no harm, you know, for us having extra people on the list. They'll get screened out through that process and ranking by the group. If we had to prioritize, then we could do that internally too and go, hey, there's maybe another funding source. But I think at this point, you know, we'll take all comers if they meet the minimum qualifications, and then they'll get screened in the ranking process, Water Development Board. But that is something we're doing, and we've had some requests about, well, if I don't fit in your plan, where do I get money? And the Water Development Board and a couple of groups have put together sort of a one-stop shopping for flood money website. And so we're trying to drive more people there so that they understand there is a lot more sort of grant opportunities, especially for things like buyout that come up through federal programs that are more of a a better fit.
Yeah.
But fair point.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, so next steps, like I said, if you're okay with the schedule that we put together, we'll bring these back in December. I think December 12th, y'all can confirm that later. But at the December meeting, we'll bring them back. They'll be polished up, and we'll, like I said, we'll evaluate them against y'all's criteria and the Texas Water Development Board minimum criteria, make sure that they can actually be recommended. Y'all don't have to vote on them in December, but we would appreciate y'all to review them and provide us with some feedback at that point. And then in February, we'll bring the full amendment back to y'all to vote on. And then we'll start really getting heavy into the cycle two effort. We'll bring up task one, task two, potentially task three. And we're going to start laying out some things that we need to start having discussions about at that point. So that's looking forward.
So logistically, Pam, we will adopt a calendar in December. Is that right? So we'll need to set the meetings.
I guess so. We're supposed to do it at the first meeting.
Well, we need to figure out what the first meeting is,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, we need to figure it out. So in December, okay. We'll need to figure out when the first meeting is for sure, because that's when we'll adopt the calendar.
Adopt the rest of the year in that first meeting.
In that first meeting.
Okay. Stay tuned.
Okay. So that's all I have.
So before we go on to anything else, does anybody have any questions about, like, sort of, does it make sense that we're doing this minor amended, but at the same time we're starting the second cycle full document, sort of where our work efforts are, where people could get in it, you know, anything from the voting members before we go on to this next step? Wow, you guys did a great job. No questions. All right. So with that, we'll go. Did somebody?
Lisa. This is Claudia Wright. I logged in on my phone, so I'm not sure if y'all had me.
Oh, there you are. We see you.
See you now.
Hey, Claudia.
It was after a roll call, so I apologize. Had some technical problems. So, okay. Thank you.
We got you. Okay.